Welcome to the Quickening Report. I'm Patrick Wood, your host for today. We're going to have another discussion with our friend Joe Allen, who happens to be the head expert on transhumanism at the Stephen K. Bannon The War Room show. You see him perhaps often on there talking about transhumanism and issues relating to how technology is achieving these things today. And we've had a discussion already in one episode. We're going to just kind of continue that and dig a little bit deeper to see what does it mean? What is the head for us with this whole transhuman meme? This is something, by the way, I think it snuck up on a lot of people. They didn't see it, especially before COVID. It just was invisible. It was there, but it was invisible to most people. It just was not evident. But when COVID hit, lots of things started to kind of unfold that kind of wrapped in this whole concept of transhumanism. Of course, it also helped that shows like The War Room actually picked it up as a theme on Saturdays originally, talking about transhumanism every Saturday. That helped spread awareness as well. But as people started looking around and became more aware of what was going on in society, especially with related to the shots, to the COVID, to the mandates and stuff like that, the whole idea of this transhuman movement just started to kind of percolate up to the top. And people said, something's wrong here. Something's going on. I just don't quite get it. And it doesn't fit any other mold. It really is a thing of its own, and it can only be understood that way. For instance, you can't go look at Marxism, socialism, or communism, fascism, and come away with any clear understanding of what transhumanism is all about. It doesn't fit. There's just nothing there. So it has to be studied independently, and that's what we're going to do. And I'm going to bring Joe back on. Joe, welcome back to the program. You're on the Quickening Report. Thank you for your time to explain to us and share your expertise. One thing I want to dig into, we asked the question with the last episode at the end about there's true reality on one hand, and then there's this other false reality where people are thinking things that just are not connected to reality in any way. They're just making stuff up. They're spinning stories. They're getting information from places that are purely fantasy oriented. That would include things like the metaverse and a lot of stuff on TikTok, for instance. Absolutely insane. But people are kind of slipping into this alternate reality, and they're losing touch with the real world. The question is, and I think this is really going to be pertinent for our audience here, is the question is, if you run across somebody like that, who is really kind of disconnected, and they seem to be out in outer space, how can you bring them back to reality again, to the touchstone of what is real, and out of that fantasy world that seems to be you know, created now, artificially, of course, but it's growing geometrically fast. It's just exponentially fast. It's incredible. What do you think, Joe? How do you talk somebody down, bring somebody back to reality when they're so far out?
Yeah, you know, Patrick, that's the million-dollar question. If I could solve that one, I would not only be rich, but maybe I would actually do something to help the world. I think that one thing that has to happen, whether or not it's someone, just an individual doing it, on a cultural level, there has to be a push to return people to concrete realities that digital realities have largely replaced. There is that push in existence now. There are a lot of different groups, a lot of different subcultures that are seeking to do that. And so, and that extends from everyone from, you know, Christians to hippies to, you know, the sort of hipster culture, the kind of young people who are, starting these little boutique farms, things like that. I've always found that to be, however much of a sort of simulation that is of traditional ways of life, at least people are getting their hands dirty. And I think there's also a push among a lot of young people to begin to reconnect to other people in physical space, to have actual social interactions. But if that's, I don't know whether that's enough to counterbalance, or certainly not to overturn, the zeitgeist of the culture, which is right now to digitize every interaction. any possible way that a human being would connect to another person, whether it's family connections, whether it's friendships, romance, the spiritual relationships of someone with their priest or their rabbi, all of these are being digitized. All of people are encouraged to turn to their smartphones or their computer screens and to turn to various platforms to do what we have always been made to do, which is to commune with each other. And I think that that in and of itself is very, very dangerous. It's very, very prevalent. And I suspect that, you know, I've never been known for my optimism. I suspect that the cultural movement to digitize all of these different intimate elements in our lives will probably just have to play out before there's any mass movement in the other direction. I see the traditional religious communities that are preserving the sorts of human-to-human interactions or the sorts of just the cultural settings that preserve human-to-human interactions as being these bastions against the wider movement, that they will be the sort of anchors that human beings have in, you know, actual reality, actual concrete reality. They will be to some extent infested by the digitization of culture, but I do think that they will serve as these preserves of humanity as that wider movement plays itself out. That's, you know, my prediction. We'll see what happens. I hope that I am wrong there, but it seems like the most likely trajectory for humanity. If I could just say this really quickly on that topic, though, the tendency of authorities or the tendency of any human being to trick another human being has always been there, right? If you look in the stories of the Bible, deceit is, you know, is at the very, very beginning of the story with the serpent. And so I think that digitization, you know, advanced technology just accelerates and exacerbates a pre-existing tendency. I oftentimes think back to the Sumerians or the Egyptians and the ways in which they constructed the first cities and the symbols and icons they used to convey what the higher reality was to not only the upper classes that were in direct contact with these temples, but also down to the lower classes, so that they had control of the social reality. And, you know, there have been a few hiccups. I do think that for all of its materialism and anti-religious sentiment, the Enlightenment and the Renaissance and the scientific revolution offered some freedom from that tendency to use religious mythos in order to inculcate social psychology and to establish social control. But we're rapidly moving back towards this bizarre sort of Egyptian model, where the people who are really in control of the technological infrastructure, the people in Silicon Valley or the media organizations that are charged with disseminating what's supposed to be truth, or the governmental organizations that are there to weed out supposed misinformation or disseminate whatever the facts of the day are supposed to be, they have recreated that hierarchical model in ancient Egypt or even, you know, ancient Sumeria going forward. I think that it offers some degree of freedom for many people to get facts, alternative facts, so to speak, or alternative points of view they never would have been able to. So it's a mixed bag. But ultimately, what I see is just a tendency towards that centralization of information control and therefore the centralization of social control. So I hate to be a big Debbie Downer, but I think that, you know, the good Lord put me on earth to depress people.
I've had that thought too, every once in a while. I would just tell our listeners, generally speaking, that we're not like trying to, you know, promote ludism here, where we want to go destroy the machines, and you know that's going to be the answer to stuff. We have to live with this stuff. It's here, and it's not going to be wiped out. Nobody's going to wipe it out on a worldwide basis. You know, smartphones are here. Things like ChatGPT are here, and all kinds of other things that we've been talking about. They've been invented. They're here. Nobody's going to just say, "Oh, destroy that and go back to square one." But the mind game, and I have to say, reality is where it's found in the mind. It's not found anywhere else. It's not found in a computer chip. It's not found in programs. It's found in the mind. And how people view the world through their mind, through their eyes, and the information they take in, they have an opportunity to connect with reality or not. Some really choose not to because their life is so poor anyway that they don't want any part of it. They'd rather live in some other fantasy world. But for a lot of people who have been tricked, who have been nudged, who have been deceived by these things coming in, whatever freedom there's going to be, it's going to be in your mind first, not necessarily in just throwing your smartphone out in the street, running over it 16 times. I've thought about that before, by the way, and I reject that thought. there have been days when I thought, I'm done with this thing. I'm gonna make a big protest and get, you know, but probably a bunch of people would follow me too if I did such a thing, especially if I, you know, videoed it for like TikTok or something. Run over your phone, you know, get rid of Apple or something like that. But that's not the answer. The answer has to lie in the mind and putting up a defense around your mind that will recognize when you're being schmoozed, when you're being deceived, when you're being led down a path you maybe don't want to go down, and you know you end up with consequences that you didn't really plan on in the first place. So whatever the answer is, it's going to be ultimately, it's going to be in a person's mind. You know, like you and I can talk, we communicate pretty well, reasonably well anyway. But I know people that I could not have any conversation with whatsoever, absolutely none. There's no communication between us. Which is sad, and there can't be any communication because they're so far out of, removed from reality, there's nothing left to talk about because I don't want to talk about the fantasy. I just got no part of it. I'd rather talk about things that are in the real world, the real things about life. So in the end of it, whatever the case is, the battle begins and ends in the mind. I remember there's a book years ago, I think it was called Battle for the Mind. Actually, I think it was written by a Christian author, as a matter of fact. This is had to do something with education and just society in general. It's really true. The battle is for the mind. And that's exactly what was occurring in Genesis chapter 3 with a serpent beguiling Eve. Surely you will not die. Eat this and you will have the tree of knowledge will give you all kinds of stuff concerning things you never understood before. It was deception. And that deception, unfortunately, it was not good for her to do that, but her perception of it was she was deceived, and she did it. And she could have been, theoretically, she could have been saved from that, having, you know, she just said, no, I don't believe you. Who knows where we'd be today, but, you know, that's what happened. So the bargain today is pretty much the same. Deception is still with us. And it is basically the same lie. You can live forever. That's transhumanism. Or maybe you can just extend your life, you know, quite a bit, where you could live maybe 200 years instead of 80 years. And, you know, the other thought is kind of a Gnostic thought where you can have access to all that hidden knowledge if you simply would submit to it. And, of course, you get the human knowledge and find out there that secret knowledge, and you find out, gee, this really led me down a rabbit hole I never wanted to go, and it ended up really killing me. So, interesting thought. I'd like to shift gears just a little bit. We talked a little bit last episode about ChatGPT and just the implications of this new system that was kind of a surprise when it came out last November. But here's the scenario. As a young man, I had to write a term paper from high school class. Oh boy, I sweated bullets on that one. I had, you know, how many words? 1,500 words in my term paper. You know, young kid, just want to play sports, hormones are running, you know, I don't want to do any of this. I can't even imagine doing that as a high school student. So I sweated bullets. I remember for like 3 or 4 weeks trying to crank out a few words that would, you know, be my term paper. Today, you can simply go to a computer and you can ask this new system, ChatGPT, write me a term paper on pick a topic and, you know, give it some details, what you're asking for, and it actually will deliver to you a relatively coherent paper to your specifications. Students are already using this. They've discovered ChatGPT, and they're already using this to create papers and articles and writings, et cetera. There was a speech given in Congress the other day that by a congressman that was written by ChatGPT on the proposed new center in America, combining U.S. AI forces with Israeli AI scholars to do something here in America, written by ChatGPT. It's like, okay, formerly intelligent people could sit down at a keyboard or a typewriter or just with a pen in hand and write something coherent and meaningful out of their own mind. They have that capability to do that. But they're choosing now, because the easy way is to go to a ChatGPT and ask for information and then fake everybody else. Oh, this is my paper. I wrote this. Isn't this a wonderful paper? Or I gave a wonderful speech on the floor of the House and, oh, but it was my speech, but nobody knows maybe that it was written with ChatGPT. Where's this going, do you think, Joe?
You know, I see three trends that are probably inevitable. The first is on the level of education. They have created software to try to detect these large language model generated documents. They look for average papers because right now ChatGPT produces very average work. I suspect, though, that students have already learned and will rapidly learn that they can use the large language model to produce the structure and factual elements in the paper and then rewrite it to the point that you'll be able to get it past the commissar, so to speak, the software. But what will happen, and you already see it now with previous technologies, right? You already see it with this knee-jerk this reflex to go to Wikipedia or to go to Google rather than to go through all of the information in a book or a series of books and extract the pertinent information in the process, absorbing lots of other information. So I think that that's just inevitable. You're going to see that all over the place. And, you know, one of the big worries that critics of technology have voiced, and we're talking about going back into the Victorian era, maybe before, is that human beings in the face of all of this complex, sophisticated machinery will begin to atrophy. I mean, even in the Victorian era, you had thinkers like Samuel Butler, people like that, who already foresaw the atrophy of human capabilities as our behaviors were offloaded to machines. This is just going to accelerate that. And there will always be, though, a little ray of sunshine here. I think there will always be those students who are vigilant, who have self-discipline, who are interested in cultivating virtue and cultivating their own minds and their own intellects. And so to the extent they even rely on large language models or search engines or Wikipedia or any of that, it becomes this very ancillary element in their education. And so those minds, I have plenty of hope, will continue to become more and more developed and brighter and brighter. What will happen, though, you know, I taught at the community college level for a while. I've been in academia for, you know, collectively 8 years of my life in doing research. What I saw and what a number of teachers tell me is that students today are just simply not prepared to read carefully, to read well, and they are definitely not prepared to express those ideas in writing. And that was certainly my experience. You had a lot of really, really potentially bright children whose ability to communicate via language has been stunted severely. So we already had this problem. This just exacerbates it. So that's number one, huge problem, and it's not going to go away. It's just simply a matter of those students who can be saved, just like it was 5 to 10 years ago, those students who can be saved, hopefully they will, and hopefully they will continue to be the sort of, you know, shining lights of the culture. The second thing that's going to happen, though, and it's already happening, and I think this will be really, really major, is that in the copywriting industry, right, in whether it be for corporate purposes or in the media or even, you know, scientific work, I think that especially as you get to GPT-4 and more advanced models, It will just be open. We are no longer going to use humans for this purpose. You just simply, you have prompt engineers is the new position. Someone who knows how to ask the right questions of the machine. Machine will do all the work from there. And so one prompt engineer can produce the copy of, you know, 100 or whatever the number is, human writers. And so as those positions go away, all these jobs, all these roles that forced people to use language to write, they're going to go away. And so that sort of practice is going to go away. The jobs themselves are going to go away. And more of our media content will simply be the product of artificial minds. And yes, they do sort of resemble human minds, but the potential then for the culture to become kind of swamped for the dead internet theory that there are more bots on the internet than not, that conspiracy theory will in essence come true. And I think that that's already happening. It's happening in the use of large language models, also in the use of the image generators like DALL-E 2 from OpenAI, or Imagine from Google, or Midjourney, or Stable Diffusion. All these artists who honed their craft, yes, it was busy work, but they honed their craft by producing graphic art, they won't be necessary anymore. And you won't be able to compete in a fast-paced culture, in a fast-paced market, if your company doesn't adopt these things. And the third thing, and I'll hit this just really quickly, the third thing that I see happening is that the tendency for human beings to develop relationships with machines will basically, that tendency will also accelerate, so that now you have these complex large language models with which you can have something like a conversation. Conversational relationship is just so essential to the human being in our social interactions. And I think that with the development of advanced large language models, and also as you get the sort of superficial masking of images, digitally generated images to go along with it to give you visual cues, that what we talked about last time, that the development of a culture in which human beings interact with machines as if they have souls, the religion of transhumanism, so to speak, that will also accelerate with the development of these technologies. So, I think there is the ray of sunshine that many people will not do this. And I think that many people will, remain human, so to speak. But we will be in the presence of others who are, in essence, cyborgs, who are, in essence, fused to machines. And that's just a future, kind of, as you said earlier, we have to deal with, we have to brace for.
The World Economic Forum talks about a post-human condition, ultimately, that the idea of transhuman is it where you're going somewhere. You're in transition from your current mortal state into something else. Not a whole lot is said about what a post-human would look like, even though we're suggesting a few things like merging with technology and implantables and swallowables and electronic tattoos on your skin. There's all kinds of stuff we could talk about. But in the mind of a transhumanist, how they define, just in the remaining couple of minutes we have here, how they define what it looks like to be a post-human? Where are they going? Where's the end of this? Or is it no end?
It's so abstract because, as is pointed out by people like Ray Kurzweil or Ben Goetzel, those who believe a singularity is in fact imminent, there's no way to predict what will happen at that point because human beings simply don't have the capacity. In their imagination of this future, you are going to have artificial intelligence systems that are able to produce a variety of physical forms, functional physical forms, and even wider variety of mental constructs or mental mechanisms that human beings have never had, can never dream of comprehending. Right. So in their imagination of the post-human, you see it in art. It's it's every variety of these kind of psychedelic images of, semi-humanoid or non-humanoid or crystalline sorts of figures. In their imagination of the post-human, what is on the other side of this transhuman movement, it is obsessed with intelligence, the ability to gather and process data at superhuman levels. They imagine it as kind of superhuman abilities to manipulate matter. So it, you know, it starts with the most basic thing, robots or backhoes or something like that, right? But, you know, in Ray Kurzweil's vision and a number of other people, they see it extending even to the nano level, right? So that at the molecular level, human beings or these post-human beings will be able to manipulate matter and create any sort of physical form or imagery or manipulate any physical process through that, right? Through nanotechnology and the creation of what Ray Kurzweil often calls computronium, so that anything, any bit of matter that can be converted into a computation device, you know, that they often talk about how a grain of sand, the silicon in a grain of sand, can process X number of bits if it's properly arranged. Their dream is the explosion of digital intelligence into the physical world, a sort of apocalypse, but an apocalypse they look forward to, they believe will improve things, so that any matter, any human being, any organism on Earth can be manipulated, absorbed, manipulated, and rearranged according to this higher intelligence. This higher intelligence in their typically godless universe is itself God. That is the goal, to create a God where none existed in their imagination, and that God will then extend its power across not just the human race, not just all life on Earth, but out into the solar system to conquer the galaxies. Again, this is a dream. I certainly don't subscribe to it as a reality, but to the extent that our elites are possessed of this dream, the decisions they make that have real impacts on our lives will be informed by it and will butt up against the real human needs that we have.
It's amazing. This is kind of like crossing the movie The Matrix with a Star Trek movie from years before, where things can be materialized and then you live in the Matrix in a machine somewhere in a completely false reality. Well, we're out of time for this particular episode, Joe. I want to thank you again for your time and your expertise and so on. I'm sure we haven't finished this discussion, but it should be very interesting to the listeners of the Quickening Report. And so I'll just say to all of you who are listening, dig into this topic and start looking at it more seriously. We just kind of scratched the surface and some of the terms may not be familiar to you. That's okay. Just dig into it, do some reading, do some research on your own, and you'll come up to speed pretty quickly on what the transhuman movement is all about. It is very anti-religious, anti-biblical as well, because they are seeking immortality outside of the answer they already have in the Bible. But of course, they reject that. So in any case, I'm Patrick Wood for the Quicken Report. We will see you in the next episode. Thanks for listening and God bless.